Department of Social Services.
Sorry. That's not my case.
Probably a good thing, Mr. Cannonball. Yeah. Have you all signed in?
I have.
Okay. Mr. Wells, you're representing the appellant. You'll have 15 minutes. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, please, sir.
5 minutes. Duly noted. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Wells, you can proceed to the podium.
Hey, please, court. My name is Lyman Wells. I was appointed by the court, the juvenile court, to represent the mother in this case. This is a termination of parental rights involving three minor children. There are three issues that were before the court, three findings made by the trial court that's presented here today. This case, in our mind, kind of centers around the mother and their cognitive abilities. And in the case, much was made about her faults, about what she was not able to do. We feel that the government failed to assist her properly, and that had proper services been in place, the termination would not have taken place.
Mr. Wells, there were several different times when DSS and other programs did get involved to try to assist her. Isn't that correct?
There were, if I could speak, there was an initial complaint made in the summer of 2013. And at that time, there were multiple family members living in one apartment. There was a mother. There were essentially three daughters, two of whom were pregnant. There was my client with her, the father, the children, the three children, and another child. So it was a very small space. It was a crowded space, and there were multiple problems with it. So we had no problems at all with the initial actions of the Department of Social Services. They were warranted. And so they went there in that time period. There's some, in the record, there's some mention that they provided some assistance, some government assistance, made sure the checks came in, made sure that there were diapers and things of that sort. At that stage, there was never any psychological evaluation done of my client, Ms. Malone. That didn't happen until the end of the case, or the end of the case from their perspective, in December of 2015. So it starts out in the summer of 2013 in this sort of ramshackle apartment, multiple people living there, and it continues on. It continued for 6 or 7 months before there was any services in place offered by the Dinwiddie Social Services. There was no regard to, is this mother a person that should be engaged in some sort of counseling? What is her specific diagnosis? What is her situation? There was no history that was ever, that's in the record from, she was 32 years of age, and that's about it. She was a high school graduate. There's nothing in the record that ever focused in on, did she have ADHD? Is she bipolar? Nothing of that sort. And
how deep is social services supposed to dig on these kinds of issues?
We start from the position that the government's interest is to preserve the family unit, and that this is a grave measure. So as you move forward through the case, it certainly be incumbent upon the government to find out, what is this person's situation? Did they have these problems in the past, and are they curable? In other words, if we give her some assistance, if we give her some counseling or perhaps medicine, is she going to improve? That was never done. I think in this case, or in the facts of this case, that should have been looked at. We move forward to essentially 2014. Some services are put in place. They switched services from Open Arms, I think, to National Counseling Services. If that goes on for a couple of months, but what the record details is that there were times when a person would go out there and spend 3 or 4 hours with Ms. Malone several days a week. There was no demonstration or mention of exactly what was being done. It doesn't seem like there's any counseling. I don't know if she's just sitting with her or helping her perform daily functions. It's not really detailed in the record. At a point subsequent to that, there's the psychological evaluation done by, I believe, Dr. Greenberg, and that's on page 233 in the record.
So ultimately, Mr. Wells, in terms of that evaluation, doesn't the doctor make the determination that there are some significant cognitive issues?
He says, Your Honor, that there are, but that's sort of a... I think social services wouldn't be involved if there wasn't any sort of issue. I think we could all agree on that. The four recommendations that he makes are listed, page 233. She may benefit from getting help and see a professional skilled and applied behavioral analysis approach for successful learning of social and adaptive life skills counseling. And he goes on to say that she can do tasks. The main part of his evaluation is she can do tasks if they're broken down. So if you give her a number of things to do, she needs to be able to logically break down, identify them and break them down in order that she can complete them. And that was her problem.
There were certain problems in terms of, say, like monetary or money and the ability to understand what that is and to actually manage it. When she was asked what the rent was, she had difficulty understanding how it actually would be divided. Would that be fair to say? How the record supports it.
She had difficulty, however. We had a family member, an aunt, that was there to assist her. So we moved forward from this initial apartment to Miss Malone. She actually got her own house. So after the counseling subsided, she gets her own house and she gets her own job. She has an aunt that actually helps her.
There are still health conditions even present in that new house. There's trash that was gathered with something molding. There were roaches and there were other things. So even with the support, there continue to be certain health issues that, from DSS perspective, were present. I mean, how do you address that?
I address it because when we look at Ms. Malone, I see her as a person that was improving. So after they withdraw the services, that's when she goes on her own and does these things, which I think is somewhat remarkable compared to the picture you're going to hear from them in a minute about what sort of person she is. She has her own place, and she's able to get herself back and forth to work, and she's able to keep it up. Now, there was some issue about the heat, and I think in their brief they said it was a year. I think it was a one-time thing. There weren't many visits out to that residence.
But the heat issue is a safety issue, is that not correct? According to their position.
They just said the heat wasn't working. I don't think it ever said what temperature it was outside, how warm or how cold it was. The other things that are listed in the treatment and recommendations, number two, limited cognitive abilities to count and use money. She was able to do that with the assistance of her aunt. Should be assisted with the supervision of activities of daily living and developing an awareness of cleanliness and hygiene. As we move on, there was some discussion early on that there was some body odor. Those things seem to have dissipated. And again, she's gone from a living situation of multiple family members just to herself. And she's able to adequately take care of herself. And then number four, she may benefit from a sheltered workshop to improve her ability to work while giving her a sense of productivity and independence. She'd done that. So the things that he listed in December, without the support of social service, because they withdrew, she was able to do. She, after this report, is when she gets her own place and gets her own job and is living independent. If social services would have put a counselor or another caseworker, an aide, to help her and arrange for the children to have contact with her rather than just, you know, a couple hours here and there, they could have transitioned the children back to her and the family could have become a family unit. We agree that the father's rights were terminated, but this was a case where there was nothing done for 7 or 8 months. There was some counseling done for a while. It was switched. Then it was discontinued, and a psychological was done in an effort basically to say she's beyond repair. She's a basket case. She's not.
Well, actually, what the court essentially based its finding on was the prima facie part of the statute that indicates that there is, in fact, a severe mental disability that would impact the safety of the children. Do you want to speak to that and why the court was incorrect in that finding?
Well, they made three different holdings.
But I understand, but I'd like you to speak to that one first, and then however else you wish to address them.
We have evidence that the mother loved her children. We have evidence that the child loved their mother. We don't have any evidence that she's ever on drugs, that she was ever violent, that she ever did anything to harm anyone. And we have no mental health diagnosis other than she has some cognitive difficulties. We have a person that's willing to work with social services. She never denied wanting to work with them. And there's testimony that's in the record. I believe I asked, you know, is there anything that could be done to facilitate all this? And the caseworker essentially said, if you had somebody in there 24 hours a day, we don't have money for that. So, some of this, I guess, is economic. It's never written in the law, but sometimes it is. In this case, we see it as a person that was improving, not backsliding. I'm into my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wells.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. O'Donnell.
Good morning, Your Honor.
And Ms. Tafey, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Your Honor. Our view of the facts is slightly different. Social services became involved, as counsel noted, in the summer of 2013. At that point in time, this social worker who testified at this hearing before the circuit court went to the home, and what she observed at that time were very unsafe conditions for children. There were a number of people living in the household. There's no question of that. This was a very complex situation. Two other sisters, one of whom had one child, and that child was actually returned to that mother. The other sister had three children, and parental rights were terminated with regard to those three children.
Why is that relevant to this particular situation that the other sister had her rights terminated?
The complexity that the agency was facing when it first went to the home. So perhaps the termination is not relevant, but I think the fact that this was a complex situation with multiple issues going on within one household that the agency was trying to address. The testimony was that the agency was in that home many times over a month. It was sometimes in the home several times in a week. The agency provided an outside resource, which was the Open Arms counseling group. The agency provided that agency for this mother and two of her children. Each had their own counselor who came in. This is long before the removal took place. This was between the summer of 2013 and the June of 2014 when the agency filed the petitions alleging abuse or neglect of these three children. The agency continued to provide those services, and the court reviewed the protective orders. The protective orders were very detailed as to what the agency hoped to see happen, what the response the agency hoped the mother would be able to do. And again, the agency provided not only itself in the home on many occasions, but also the in-home providers through Open Arms. Eventually, though, the circumstances did not change significantly, and the agency asked the court to make the adjudication of abuse or neglect and transfer custody to the agency, which is what happened in March of 2015. So between the summer of 2013 and the actual removal in March of 2015, there were many services, many hours, many efforts made to maintain these children in the home with their mother. During this time, there was one move, but the entire group moved to a second household. During this time, the aunt to whom counsel referred was also involved. She was involved from day one. She did not live with the family. She lived in Petersburg. and she took care of the household. She managed the money. She did all of those sorts of things, provided food as a testimony. She was the one who went and got food when they called and said, we don't have enough food. So to suggest that she was a resource available to the mother at the end of the proceedings is not, she was not a reliable resource. She was not an available resource from the agency's perspective. When the agency had the court's approval to actually remove the children, the services continued in an effort to see whether without the children there, the mother could learn the skills necessary to meet their daily needs. One of the children had ringworm at the outset. The agency attempted to see that that child received medical treatment. So the agency encouraged the mother to make an appointment. The mother had Medicaid for the child. The mother, with the agency's assistant, made the appointment, took the child, got the ointment. She never gave the child the ointment, so another child ended up with ringworm. She didn't comprehend what was necessary to actually take care of the child's needs. Two of the children had many teeth removed when they first came into care. That was because they had improper diets and lack of brushing their teeth. So you had two preschoolers who together probably had at least 10 teeth removed between the two of them. These are baby teeth. One of the children had a root canal. While the children were in the mother's care, despite the services being offered, we were unable to turn the corner to where the mother, even with the services involved, could adequately take care of the children on a day-to-day basis. In the mother's care, the oldest child, who was the only school-age child at the time, did not attend school on a regular basis, was failing several subjects. He was in the first grade, and he was failing subjects. He had excessive absences. He was showing signs of aggressive behavior in the home and highly sexualized behaviors. Well, one of the problems there was that the mother in the first household shared a room with the father of the three children plus the three children, and there were only two beds. The agency had to say, please, do not interact with your husband in the bed with the children present.
Counsel, if you want to speak, though, to what Mr. Wells is saying, which is looking at the second home or residence, yes, and the fact that the agency didn't provide adequate support at that time.
Right. After the children's removal, and there were actually three homes, all of which the mother was living in prior to the first termination hearing, as the job was also obtained prior to the first termination hearing. In that home, after the removal, the agency sat down with the family and said, maybe we need to take a fresh look. And the agency changed the in-home provider from Open Arms to National Counseling Group, and increased the number of hours that National Counseling Group added a parenting coach and a mentor for the mother without the children present to help her understand the household tasks that needed to be done, personal hygiene, care of the children, interaction with the children during visits, because they were still having visits at that point in time, and it didn't work. The in-home provider came back and said, we're not making any more progress than the first agency made. It was that point that the agency requested in December of 2015 the full-blown psychological parenting assessment that is attached as part of the record. And it was then that the psychologist said, even this explains the minimal success the agency has had with the mother, despite the many, many levels of many hours of intensive services, is that she's not going to be able to improve. She's not going to be able to sustain these skills, that unless somebody is there day in and day out with her, she can't do it on her own. On the contrary, we have these three children who, after their removal, they were doing very well. They were in an environment where they were safe. They were in an environment where they were healthy. They were in an environment where they were attending school and doing well in school. So when all of those things were put together, it simply became clear that this mother never would be able to. And so, therefore, we proceeded with the changing goal to adoption. Yes, there were no more services after. The goal was changed to adoption, but it wasn't changed to adoption until either January or February of 2016. So from the summer of 2013 until January of 2016, the full range of services were available for the mother, were provided to the mother, and we were not able to make a change in the conditions. In our opinion, the conditions were not just the problems in the physical condition of the house. It was that the mother simply lacked the cognitive skills as an ability to parent the children on a day-to-day basis. So we think the evidence was clear and convincing. The trial court indicated it's page 99 of the appendix, exactly the reasons why the trial court found the evidence clear and convincing and why the trial court found that it was in the best interest of the children. And the judge was very clear. He said that, in his opinion, the mother had not been able to demonstrate an ability to take care of herself yet. She did have a house. She couldn't tell us who lived in the house. She told the social worker several days before that she and her sister lived there. On the day of the hearing, she said her sister didn't live there. She was unable to produce a lease. She was unable to tell us how much rent was paid. She was unable to say when the rent was paid. And again, it's not the kind of thing that you want to ask someone in these circumstances a lot of questions. It was all in the record in the terms of the foster care service plans and the prior orders of the court, what we were dealing with. And that was evidence before the court, before the trial court. But the judge said that, according to her testimony, she's not going back to work, which is what the mother said. She voluntarily quit the part-time, short-term job that she had, and it was because she couldn't get along, quote, with the boss lady. So she was unable to maintain employment for six solid months. She was in a house, but the conditions in the house, it wasn't a broken heater. There was no heat in the house for more than a year, was the testimony of the social worker. No heat at all. And this is the house for which the aunt is supposedly assisting the mother in taking care of. So for all of those reasons, we ask the court to affirm the findings of the trial court.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Wells, you have about 4 minutes.
In rebuttal, again, where we kind of, there's a dividing line in this case from the conditions that existed at the time in 2013 when the complaint was made and conditions at the end. And what was detailed, reading from Appellee's brief, the National Counseling Group worked with her for 6 to 10 hours per week over 3 to 4 months. That was put in place in March of 2015. That was the most extensive counseling that was done, and after that, they said they kind of changed their minds. Anyone that's been a parent knows that you have to spend a lot of time with your kids. You have to spend a lot of time with your kids. And particularly with a person that cognitive difficulties is what we've been talking about. Someone with cognitive difficulties, in order for this to work, you've got to have counseling sessions between the parent and the children. You've got to have them together, and you've got to see whether or not this is going to work out. If we had evidence in the record that, you know, we tried overnights, or we tried multiple times of the children being over there for an afternoon, and she just couldn't take care of them. You know, a child went out and tripped or cut himself. But we don't have any of that because it was never attempted. And this case is factually distinct because of that. And to just put in additional services to give it another shot, give it a second try, and do that for 3 or 4 months in a situation like this, particularly where we don't know any history, we feel was inadequate on the part of the government. And we do realize that there's a concern about the best interests of the children. We do acknowledge that. But we start from a principle that we want to keep families intact, and we want to keep families together. And we feel that in this case, the government just fell short in terms of certainly right at the outset and doing what they did, but halfway through, they switched gears. And then once she is able to do these things on her own, there's no support for her. So we'd ask you to reverse, find that there was evidence was insufficient, that there's decision did not have the requisite evidence to support it. Reverse the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. We'll come down and greet counsel.